in the future. And Soraya Tramale of the Women's Media Center Speech Project speaking to us from Washington, D.C. That does it for our broadcast, Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
KPFT Houston, yeah.
Welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio with our hosts from Children at Risk, child activist Dr. Katie McConnell and research expert Annie Canellis. What do we have on tap today, Katie and Andy?
Thanks, Don.
Hi, thank you, Don, and thank you everyone for tuning in today. We are going to start off today's show with Children at Risk Director of the Center for Parent and Family Well-Being, Edith Rahimian, and she's going to tell us about the significance of the number 45.
And after Datahead, we're going to be talking to Connor Hagan, the Public Affairs Officer for the Houston FBI. Connor is going to be sharing information with us about the FBI Citizens Teen and Youth Outreach Academies.
I was so excited when I saw this name on the agenda today. I can't wait to have that conversation. And then I think this is where the conversation's really going to get heated up. We are going to be talking to Lawrence Allen, who is a candidate for the State Board of Education for District 4. We're going to talk to him about his vision for education in Texas. And I think this is really timely given the big announcement coming out of HISD today, which we'll jump into. I'm dying to talk about it. It's so exciting. But yes, this will be a great opportunity to really dig into education for a little bit today.
Absolutely. And building on that today on our social conscious scale, we want you to call in and share your opinion in our thumbs up, thumbs down segment. Should kids get a say in the school hiring process? Or we might want to change that question to the a superintendent hiring process,
again,
given the news that broke 1 hour
given ago. Given today's updates. No, it's a very interesting topic. I always value kid perspective. They always bring such unique things to the table. So I'll be really curious to hear, Andy, not only what you think of this, but what some of our callers have to say. And then to wrap up the show today, we will have several guests in studio, and they're actually here with us now. They've just joined us from the National Black Child Development Institute. We'll be hearing from the president and CEO, Tobika Green, and Houston affiliate president, Deborah Green, and the director of policy and external relations, Amisha Cross, who I had the privilege to speak to on the phone earlier this afternoon as she was trying to navigate her way through the Houston streets. I didn't mean to throw you under the bus there, Amisha, but we are so glad you guys not only made it to the Children at Risk office today, but you're here to join us for our radio show this afternoon.
Sounds like a great show, Katie.
It's going to be a really busy hour, Andy. In addition to all of this, we have to keep in mind it's also Fun Drive, so we'll have the opportunity to speak to somebody that many of our listeners are very familiar with, and that's Dwayne Bradley, who's here as our pitch. What? Dwayne, is that you?
Yes. Hi.
Hi. We're so glad to have you with us this hour. I know many of our listeners are happy to hear your voice on the airwaves this afternoon. How are you doing?
I am doing well, and it's great to be with you, Mandy and Bob. I mean, Katie and Andy.
The other Mandy and Bob, right?
Yeah. It's a power-packed show, as always. Growing up in America and the hard work that y'all at Children at Risk do each and every week, all week long, and then bring it into the radio station on Monday afternoons to share it with not only the listenership of the Upper Texas Gulf Coast, but all around. It's really important. It's powerful work. And very timely today, of course, with some of your guests you're bringing in. And looking forward to all the information. And looking forward to raising, we have a goal of $400 for this program, this hour, a very low, modest amount for a program as powerful as Growing Up in America. 713-526-5738 is the phone number. 713-526-KPFT. Just give us a call and let us know what you'd like to do on behalf of the children and on behalf of Growing Up in America for this independent, community-based, non-commercial, independent Pacifica Radio outpost of the South right here. 100,000 broadcast watts of freedom coming at you from 90.1 FM. So let us know that you're there and that you care and that you've got a little bit of something to spare. Visa, Discover, American Express, and MasterCard make it quick, easy, and painless. But if you want to do cash, check, money order, we can work that in however you want to do it. 713 713- 526-5738. We've got folks sitting out here. They've donated their time today to be here. They're ready, they're rested, and they're raring to go. So make the call that makes it all possible right now, please. 713-526-5738, which 5738 is actually KPFT if you have the letters. So you can actually spell it out. 713-JAM-KPFT. J-A-M-K-P-F-T.
J-A-M-K-P-F-T. I never knew that before, actually, Dwayne. Thank you so much for pointing that out. Again, we're so glad to have you here to help support us this afternoon. We know that we're, of course, very biased to the work that Children at Risk does, but this is such a unique opportunity for us to spread the word about children, not only in the city of Houston, the state of Texas, but throughout our great country. So this is the opportunity for us to continue to support the radio station that gives us this opportunity to get the word out for some of our most at-risk children and the needs that they have.
Okay, and we'll be back to thank some of those folks who are going to call in right now.
Fantastic.
Wow, okay.
Well, thanks. We will look forward to that, Dwayne. Thank you. So with that, Andy, glad to have you here today. The Candy Show.
The Candy Show, that's right.
For those of you that haven't tuned in before, that's the Katie and Andy Show, also known as the Candy Show. So we are happy to be here this afternoon. We've got a lot to talk about, a lot to cover. Let's go ahead and get started with our Data Head. Edith, are you on the phone with us?
Yes, hello.
How are you this afternoon, Edith?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. We are so happy to have you calling in to talk about the number 45%. And again, Edith is the director of our Center for Parent and Family Well-Being. Before, Edith, we have you tell us about the number. We have some guests in the studio with us, and I would love to just get your insights, if you have any predictions, since you're not prepped at all for this, if you have any ideas what this number might be referring to, 45%. Any ideas? Guests in studio? No? Everybody's a little shy so far. Andy, what's your best guess? What do you think?
I think it's going to be 45% of parents who think something. Because Edith is the director of the Parenting Center.
Parents who think something. That was very articulate, yeah. Andy. Thank you for that insight and thoughtful contribution to the program this afternoon. Have you guys come up with a prediction? You might have.
45% of parents are actively engaged.
Actively engaged. I like that. That actually would be, I feel like, a dream world for us. With a background in education, I know that was something we were always working for. What do you think? Do you have any ideas?
The percent of children who have experienced trauma by the age of 10.
By the age of 10. Mm. Edith, we're going to kick it back to you. Enlighten us. Talk to us about 45%.
Someone got very close. So 45% of children in the United States have experienced one or more adverse childhood experience. So based off of the ACEs study. That's a new study that was released. They've done this study as well in 2011, 2012. And unfortunately, we have not really seen a decrease in that percentage when that study was done back then as well.
Wow, that is a startling number. And for Edith, I know we talk about these ACEs a lot, but for our listeners that may not be as familiar or have missed segments where you've had the opportunity to speak to the ACEs in the past, can you give us just a quick overview of what those kind of top, that sounds like a terrible explanation of them, but what those ACEs are, what those adverse childhood experiences are that really have been proven to have significant impact on children?
Yes. So it's anything that has that negative impact on children as they're growing up. And so some of these include living with a parent or a guardian that is divorced or separated at one point, living with a parent or guardian that passes away, or someone who is incarcerated, living with a parent or guardian that may suffer from a mental illness or is suicidal. Living in poverty is one of them, living in an area where you've become a victim of violence or witnessed any violence in your neighborhood, living with anyone who has a drug or alcohol problem. And so there's about 10 of these there isn't a uniformly accepted list that's going around. A lot of this is based off of a longitudinal study that was done with a group of adults to see the impact that ACEs has had on their lives. And we know that if you are a child that has three or more ACEs, you are at risk, essentially. And so that's why this is something to be concerned about and something to definitely look into. So
definitely. Well, and when I look at what I'm listening, again, I know this information, but still just hearing it and putting it in context of 45% of our children.
Nearly almost half of our children, right, that are going to school are experiencing an adverse childhood experience.
And so what do we do? Edith, director
give us all
the Center
the answers.
For Parent and Family Well-Being.
Give us all the policy solutions
what
in
do we do
20
with this?
Seconds.
No, in 20 seconds. What do we do with this number, Edith?
Yes, I think being trauma-informed at the school level is going to be extremely critical. But currently, right now, teacher pedagogy and teacher preparedness programs don't necessarily offer trauma-informed curriculum. And so as a teacher and as someone who was a former teacher, I would say being informed in this information is step one. So it's this first step, understanding what ACEs are and the impact that it has on children. And then step two is making sure that teachers and school personnel go through trauma-informed training, so that you have a different set of tools that you can utilize for children who are, you might see as acting out, but the root of the issue is something more than just your typical 6-year-old is throwing a temper tantrum.
Right. We see that a lot. And I think here in the Houston area, in the Gulf Coast region, we're going to see a lot more children after following Hurricane Harvey that have experienced some sort of trauma. And we are at the kind of the point now where I think many educators are really starting to see some of these traumatic events surface. And I think you hit the nail right on the head with, we have to, in our schools, make sure we're paying attention to these kinds of things and responding accordingly. And I think to Andy's point, there are some policy solutions that could be implemented not only in our schools, but just also in our childcare settings and just from a general public health standpoint that we could put in place to really help help our kids and adults as well that perhaps have experienced these ACEs as a child and are now have grown up and are learning to live with the ACEs and the impact that they had.
Yeah. So does this mean we can't be, it's not acceptable for Texas to be number 43 and per pupil spending in education? We need more resources for a lot of these supports and services.
So are we going to pivot to talk about school finance? Because I'm happy to go there for all of you listening. Please don't. No, but I do think it is important in certain things like trauma-informed care. It is going to take a little bit more money.
Right.
And we have to be willing to allocate those dollars to make sure that our kids are getting what they need. Because it's not one size fits all. Everybody has something needs. So the more we can, again, train our teachers, train our administrators, train our just community members to deal with such a situation, the better off we'll always be.
Yeah. And I would take it even a step further in terms of the funding. I think, yes, we are going to need more funding to do these types of trainings. But I also think that we also need to have more funding in order to place more social workers at campuses.
Yes, ma'am.
Maybe instead of putting a lot of our money towards just security guards, which I can understand the argument as to why that is necessary for the safety of our children, there's another safety that our children need that we're not necessarily addressing right now by not putting an adequate number of social workers on campuses that need it most.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And we're certainly not going to use this airtime to get into the school safety debate, but we know that that is a hot topic across our country right now after the tragedies in Florida a few weeks ago. Everybody is invested now in helping to solve this problem. So this is a great time for us really to give some attention to that. Edith, thank you so much for calling in. Although your number was a little bit disheartening, we do appreciate the information. We definitely know we have our work cut out for us in the future.
All right. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks. That was Edith Rahimian, the director of our Center for Parent and Family Wellbeing at Children at Risk, calling in to join us. This is also a chance, Andy. We have 1 hour not only to get all of our guests in, but to remind all of our listeners that we are in the throes of fund drive. And this is where we have the opportunity to ask for help, to keep our show on the air. As Duane mentioned earlier, we have a very modest goal of only $400 for this hour. And each dollar that is called in and committed today helps to support Growing Up in America, helps to support getting out the message, because we know that kids, again, to the 45% number that Edith just threw out, we know that kids give them or need a lot of help and assistance these days. And this is just one avenue that we can really leverage to help get information out about kids, for families, to be sure that we have a next generation coming up that's well cared for and can really become productive citizens. So if you're moved to contribute, we would ask that you please call in at 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT, or as Duane just pointed out, 713-JAM-KPFT.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So we will have a chance to hear from Duane again in just a moment. But on the line with us, we have our next guest. And we have our next guest's intro music. There it is.
It's quite the intro.
That was quite the intro. Connor, are you on the line?
Yes, yes, I am. How are you doing today?
We are doing great. Thank you so much for taking the time. Did you pick your intro song today, Connor?
I did not, but that was a heck of an intro.
It was a heck of an intro. I'm very impressed. I think it speaks very highly to the work that you must be doing here with the Teen and Youth Academies.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you very much. I'm really excited to be on today's show, and we do have some really great community outreach here in Houston with the FBI.
Yeah, Connor, so tell us more about the Teen Youth Academy. How does it help high school students? What type of work do you guys do?
Absolutely. So the Teen Academy is a pretty exciting outreach program that we have here. It is a one-day, kind of 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Day for high schoolers that occurs in the summer. And a lot of high schoolers apply for it. It's very competitive. But what it allows Houston high schoolers to do is interact with FBI employees and case agents and our evidence response team, which everyone loves because, you know, who doesn't watch some of the TV shows with all of the cool stuff, although we don't solve the cases in 45 minutes or less. So, but they get to see all of the different dynamics of the Bureau, including our priorities, our investigative priorities, like counterterrorism and cyber, and they hear from the agents who actually work these cases.
Mm-hmm.
So they spend the whole day, and it really builds, I think, a relationship between the high schoolers in the Houston community and the FBI here.
Yeah, this sounds like a great program.
Well, and I'm sitting here listening. I'm like, but also, do you have that for grown-up nonprofit employees
right.
who are just interested and would like to learn more?
And the bridged, version, maybe a 1-4. Type
yes, no, we would totally just do that for the afternoon. But what a fantastic real-life learning opportunity!
Absolutely, and it's funny. It's funny you bring up the adult venue because we do actually have an adult citizens academy, and that is for community leaders, business, religious or civic leaders, to get an inside look at the FBI. And it's a 7-week program where FBI executives and investigators and instructors can work with and present to community leaders about all the things that we investigate and all of the priorities that we have as the FBI and our mission to protect Americans and uphold the Constitution.
Right. That's awesome. And what would you say is the biggest takeaway that you see high schools leaving with at the end of the program?
Well, I think just a closer relationship with the FBI. I think that the FBI a lot of times is kind of shrouded in this mysterious secrecy. And, as part of the community outreach program, my job is to pull that veil away and really build a relationship, where high schoolers can not only feel comfortable with, with federal law enforcement agents and employees, but also share that experience with other high schoolers. You know, we really want to reach into our community here, and you know, building these relationships with high schoolers, building the trust between our agency and their generation, it's crucial to what we do and our job to protect America.
This is so incredible. Like, I'm just sitting here and I'm wishing, I mean, I'm not that old, but when I was in high school, like, I certainly can't remember the opportunity to engage at this level to not only, I like how you said, kind of like demystify what you do, right? But to have that learning opportunity. And I can only imagine the impact that it must have on kids to get to see kind of the behind the scenes look and how that could potentially really impact maybe not a career choice, but just at a heightened level of civic engagement, you know, moving forward into their adult lives.
Absolutely. It is a unique opportunity. And you know, I'm not that old either. So, you know, back when I think to my high school days, I really wish I'd been part of a program like our Teen Academy, because the teens that go through it, they really kind of serve as almost FBI ambassadors to their communities, and that includes their high schools, their friends, and the demystification of the FBI through us showing them what we do, who we work with, who we are. I mean, that's crucial to having them share with their friends and their families, you know, exactly what we're about and exactly what we hope, you know, eventually to lead them into is to be better citizens, like you were saying, better, you know, members of the community.
That is so. Can you tell us a little bit about how people can learn more about this program, especially if they have children that might be eligible of age, or if there's any way that people can support?
I was going to say, or if they're a nonprofit and would like to take their staff on a field trip, you know?
Absolutely. So one of our best resources, and I put in a little bit of a shameless plug here.
By all means, you have the airwaves, sir. Take full advantage.
Absolutely. Is our website, our individual Houston website, and it is fbi.gov/Houston. And if you type that in, that will bring you to the Houston website. And, you know, on that website, under the Community Outreach tab, is just a host of resources that both adults and kids and teenagers can use. I mean, it goes over not only what our mission is, some of our successes in protecting the American people, but it also goes into, you know, how do you apply for the Teen Academy or the Citizens Academy if you're an adult? The other shameless plug I will make here is for our Twitter page, and we work really hard to maintain a very active and informed Twitter site, Twitter page I should say, and it is the handle for it is @FBIHouston, and if you go to it, we push out a lot of our successes, a lot of prevention, so, you know, how to protect yourself from certain scams, how to, you know, what to do during certain incidents, active shooter or otherwise. And the other thing, too, is we always advertise for our Citizens Academy and our Teen Academy on Twitter. So if you follow us on Twitter, you'll get that notification when it pops up, hey, it's time to apply, you know, and it will lead you to the link to apply.
Connor, thank you so much for calling in today. I know my first stop when I leave here today is going to be to look at both your Twitter and the website. This sounds like a wonderful program. Again, I love what you guys are doing. The impact that it's having is so great. So thank you so much for joining us today and for the work that the FBI in Houston is doing. As a community, we really appreciate your contributions.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and you'll have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, Connor.
All right. That was Connor Hagan, the public affairs officer with the Houston FBI. Again, as he mentioned, if you'd like more about their teen or youth academies, go to fbi.gov/Houston. Also, I'm intrigued to look at their Twitter. Sounds like they've got some good information on there. So with that, we'll go ahead and move right into our next guest. No, we will take a pitch it to Dwayne. I thought I heard you there, Mr. Bradley. How's it going out there?
Oh, you know, it's pleasant. It's pleasant.
We have
a crew out here that are reading today's New York Times, listening to the program, having some conversation, eating some of the wonderful food that our friends over at Champ Burger over on Sampson Street over in the East Side sent over to, you know, power up the crew here for a late lunch today.
Fantastic.
And so we want to thank them for doing right by KPFT. And sad to say, we still have to take that first step on that $400 road to victory for Growing Up in America today. 400 bucks by 4 o'clock is the goal. So we have over a half an hour to do this, and, you know, one person could simply do it by saying,
for
hey,
sure.
You know what? Why don't you just put me down in that Dollar a Day Club membership? It's about $30.42 a month, and that ends up on your fantastic plastic Visa, Discover, American Express, or MasterCard each month. Over the course of a year, there's $365, and voila, we're, you know, the lion's share of the goal in one fell swoop. Or we can do it with a handful of folks calling in at the $25 level. Or how about this? It's KPFT celebrated its 48th birthday on Thursday, the first day of this spring drive. Even though it's not spring, we've gone 4 months without coming on the air to ask for support. And this is a commercial-free, independent, community-based radio station. So as opposed to other public radio stations that are affiliated with schools and churches, while we are the Church of the Blues on Sunday, and while we are a university of the mind all the time here at KPFT, we're not one of the school stations like U of H or Prairie View or TSU or Alvin Community College or, you know, all the different schools that have radio licenses down here in the low end of the FM where all the non-commercial educational folks live. The other stations around us are religious broadcasters, of course, predominated by evangelical Christians. You know, and here we are right smack dab in the middle of it, 90.1, right in between Jazz and Jesus is where you find us. And right in between Jazz and Jesus. And I'm a big fan of both. I like
As
jazz.
Am I, Dwayne.
And, you know, Jazz and Jesus are both good for me. And
good for the soul.
Yeah.
Good for the soul.
So we are the one, the true, the only truly independent, locally produced, community-based, people-powered, owned and operated by the people. This is your
for the people,
station.
By the people, Dwayne.
Is it. This is it. Abe Lincoln would be a member if he were still around.
You are absolutely right. He would be. But we need more people like Abe Lincoln would be if he
we
were still around.
We need somebody to prime the pump and get things, you know, get things ringing. Ring some bells of freedom for education, for children at risk, for growing up in America, for Pacifica Radio, for independent thought.
Right, and you know, we're about to have a fantastic guest on the line, Lawrence Allen, who's actually a candidate for the State Board of Education. With all that's going on in education right now, there's so much opportunity, there's so much need, and without a place like KPFT for us to come on and to talk about those, it's really hard to get the message out.
Mm-hmm.
So we want people to call in, we want them to contribute, so we can continue, again, to spread the message, to have the commercial-free hour once a week where we really focus on kids and their needs, and like I said, especially with a focus on education.
713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Ring that bell, get on the line with one of the volunteers. If you want to pick up on a ticket package or a tote bag or a t-shirt, we have all those kinds of things to maybe make it feel more
sweeten
worthwhile
the pot
for you.
A little
yeah,
bit.
We can sweeten the pot.
Sure.
But you know, the best feeling you're going to get is just that feeling of warmth in your heart for knowing that you did the right thing when you simply make a donation to KPFT. A little bit goes a long way, and it does make a big difference, and KPFT relies on you to power up this Tower of Freedom. 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. So give us a call, please, right now. And if you're not near a phone for some odd reason, maybe you're just listening on a computer through work or somewhere else on planet Earth and you don't really feel like calling and talking to some human over in Houston, well, you can simply go to kpft.org. You're probably already there if you're listening online. And you can tap the donate button. Make your donation quick, easy, and painlessly through that service. And then it'll show up on the computer here at the station, and boom, Growing Up in America won't be sitting on some snake eyes staring at us over
right.
here on the wall.
Now, we're going to go ahead and cut to our next guest, Dwayne,
okay.
And I hope that when we come back to you in just a few minutes, we will have someone will have called in.
Ring those bells of freedom. 713-526-KPFT.
Fantastic. Again, listeners, thank you so much. On the line with us now, we have Lawrence Allen. We have Mr. Allen's intro music.
First things first, I'ma say all the words inside my head. I'm fired up and tired of the way that things have been. Oh, ooh, the way that things have been. Oh, ooh.
That was also a fantastic intro. Mr. Allen, how are you this afternoon?
Good afternoon, Katie and Andy, and thank you for the invitation to the Candy Show.
Well, thank you for actually listening. We appreciate that. It's so great to have you on the line this afternoon. We're so eager to talk to you and hear what you're looking to do, what you're hoping to achieve as you're running for the State Board of Education in District 4. We know you're a longtime HISD educator. What role are you currently serving in HISD, if you don't mind us starting right now?
Let me first mention that I want to make a $100 donation so that you can meet your goal of $400. I will do that as soon as we hang up. I'll call in and make that donation of $100 toward that $400 goal today.
Thank you so much. You have
25%.
25%.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we sincerely appreciate that. It really is, again, we're a little bit biased, but we know that the work that we do here on Monday afternoons is important because we have the opportunity to talk to movers and shakers like yourself, people who really are boots on the ground making change happen in our schools each and every day.
Yes, ma'am. And to your question, I am currently the community liaison for the Houston Independent School District. I primarily work with our faith-based community and the relationships that we have with our churches and those who come out of the faith organizations.
That is awesome. And you are running again. You're a candidate again for State Board of Education District 4. You currently serve on the State Board of Education. What are you hoping? What is your vision? What are you hoping to accomplish?
Well, I certainly want to continue some of the work that we've been doing, but what I'm excited about now is that we're entering into real conversation about Mexican American studies in the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. I think it's critical that we produce a course for the state of Texas to raise that self-esteem. As you were talking to the last caller about the trauma and the mental issues that students go through, we find that when students engage in courses where they can identify with their heritage and their culture, that they're able to overcome some of these deficits. So I think it's vitally important with the demographics in Texas today that we start by producing a Mexican-American study course or Latino course to raise that self-esteem for our students.
Oh, that's great.
That is great. And I know you are a native Houstonian. You are a product of our HISD schools, and I'm going to just side tangent real quick because
yes, we have to.
Can't. We are still. Andy actually came into my office this afternoon and he slid in on two wheels and he was like, Katie, did you hear the news about Superintendent Carranza transitioning to take over as superintendent of the New York City Public Schools? How is that going to impact? I know locally it's going to have a substantial impact. Based on your role in HISD now, what impacts do you see happening there?
Well, we are in the middle of a lot of conversations with TEA as pertains to some of our schools in HISD, whether they are going to close or be restarted or whatever we plan to do with outside organizations with those campuses. And I believe that it is critical that the superintendency be solid during those conversations. This move will probably set us back because whenever you submit plans, the person who is to carry out those plans is most important. So I would hope the district would move swiftly in establishing the leadership because it's critical as we talk about funding, we're talking about changing how we actually fund our campuses. So I wish our superintendent well. He's a great, 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 great man, but I believe we have a tremendous void to fill right now, not at the end of the year, but right now.
Right now.
And, you know, there's a lot of people, especially those that have lived in Houston for a long time and have followed the school district, that are just amazed at all of the significant issues that are currently all at play, $115 million deficit, magnet restructuring, funding restructuring.
I was going to say the financial Harvey, deficit in and of itself.
Right,
is...
this potential TE takeover. What would your message? What would your message be to people in the community who are becoming or are already very concerned about the state of community schools and the largest school district in our region? What would your message be to encourage them to not lose hope or to keep hope alive as they're seeing all of this unfold?
My message would be that there is a tremendous amount of human capital and talent in the Houston Independent School District. One person does not run the district. But we are facing a situation like never before. And so it's going to require a group of individuals to come together, but we're asking everybody who has not paid attention in the past to pay attention right now. We met last week with about 150 pastors to get the message out about the need to communicate with their congregations about the time that we are dealing with right now in the Houston Independent School District. So what I'm trying to say, I've been in HISD now for 34 years. I know we can navigate these waters. It is truly going to be difficult, so I don't want to make light of that.
Right.
And that some real decisions have to be made, and everybody may not come out happy. But if we keep the children in mind, first and foremost, the best things can be done. Mm-hmm. If we try to deal with the business population or make somebody happy, we're going to miss it. Right now, we've got to focus on pre-K through 12, what's the best for the learning for our children and nothing else.
Mr. Allen, you are absolutely preaching to the choir right now. We're like high-fiving here in the studio because it really comes down to some of those fundamentals. And you do have a wealth of knowledge. You have not only in HISD, but also in the service that you've provided to the state up until this point. And now, of course, we want to plug that tomorrow is election for our primaries, and it's important that people get out and that people vote and they let their voice be heard. One of the big issues that I anticipate that the State Board of Education will continue to wrestle with is that around school finance. What is kind of your position on school finance, again, in this very tumultuous time around school finance?
When it comes to the State Board of Education, we act as an advisory group, per se, to our legislation, to our legislators, because they make those big decisions about school financing. We have a $40 billion educational endowment called the Permanent School Fund that actually produces about $2 billion that goes into the budget to be distributed back to schools for materials, instructional materials. But I'm saying to you that as I'm talking to different legislators, they really and truly recognize that something different has to happen. But they're saying that we're already spending about 60% of our budget on education, and that they're hoping that the schools could do things differently than they've done in the past. And that's a good conversation. But in reality, as you talked about earlier, there are a lot of challenges going on in schools like never before. And there is a degree of professional assistance needed at the school that was not there before. Like the social workers, we have to reinvest in our counselors. We have to get all kinds of special education specialists because we've not really done our best by our students in special education. So there is a different view of education, not just reading, writing, and spelling, but the level of professional assistance that's actually needed if we want to see our young people succeed.
If you could see the level of aggressive head nodding that is going on as you're talking right now, we do that. You know, at Children at Risk, we really focus on the whole child. And, you know, we work closely to help improve our public schools as much as we possibly can. But we know it's not just about the reading, writing, and the arithmetic, so to speak. There's so much more to reach the needs of the whole child and make sure that we are really within our school systems where we know we will meet every child, that we're providing those supports that are necessary.
Yes.
And it's a long road ahead. We've got a long way to go. A lot of irons in the fire right now. As we prepare to transition, Mr. Allen, again, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Is there anything else that you would like to say for our listeners? As again, we're going to continue to encourage folks to get out and vote tomorrow. It's an important day. But is there anything else that you would like to say, kind of based on your platform, just to share your thoughts?
I just want to end by saying the same thing. I'm encouraging everybody to get out and vote tomorrow, because all of this conversation ends tomorrow with the way we vote, because we have to elect people that have the vision, the passion, and the dedication to do what's right for the citizens that they represent. I am one who realizes that you should not speak your own mind, but you should speak the mind of those who elected you. And so I believe that if we have that kind of leadership, we will get the job done. Believe me, 10 years from now, we will laugh at this situation on how great we did during this time.
Ooh, I'm going to come back to you. I'm going to hold you to that. 10 years?
Is that, I better be laughing.
I was going to say, we're ready to draw the line in the sand. 10 years it is. Thank you so much. Best of luck
Thank
in your
you.
Election. Thank you for all that you've contributed to HISD through the years, and that also that you've contributed to the State Board of Education. We really appreciate passionate, well-informed educators like yourself.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much, sir, and best of luck tomorrow.
Thank you, and I'll call right back to make that donation.
Yes, of course.
Thank you so much.
You're
what
welcome.
A great conversation. So inspiring. We know our schools have a lot going on, but, you know, it's exciting to hear that there is a race of impassioned people to try and do right by our kids. So with that, we do fortunately get to acknowledge that we've made a dent in our goal for this
hour.
Andy, $400. Mr. Lawrence Allen, who is running for the State Board of Education, has committed to $100. Dwayne, other than Lawrence calling in with that $100, have we gotten anybody else in the last hour?
Well, we're waiting for the Lawrence line to ring at
713-526-5738-526-KPFT.
It was good hearing from him. And I know that Jack and Howard and Stu are ready to jump that first phone when it does ring. The lines are open and available right now. Each one of those phones that you don't hear ringing in the background represent an opportunity for you to ring and for you to make a difference in the doing. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. This is the first Monday of KPFT's 2018 birthday membership campaign.
I hear
it. That's
it.
Thank you for that. 713-526-5738. You know, it costs just under $150 an hour to power this radio station, and that's a lot of money when you think that's, you know, every hour, every day, middle of the afternoon, middle of the night, weekend, weekday, doesn't matter. We average it out over, you know, time, and that's about $3,600 a day. That's, you know, over $1 million a year. And we don't have commercials. We don't have a church or school pumping money up underneath us or supplying us with facilities or things like that. This is powered by the people, and we're inside of a 103-year-old home that was built in 1915 in the spring by James A. Baker, down here in a new section of town called Montrose.
It's brand new section of town called Montrose.
And here we are. We've been in this little old house since 1975 when we moved from downtown, and we have converted this. You guys are out there in what used to be the front porch of this old house, in this room that it has had so many amazing conversations. So much information has been shared. So many amazing performances have been generated out of that room. Willie Nelson has, you know, slept in that room. 713-526-5738 is the phone number. So give us a call and let us know you're out there. Let us know that you've got something to share. Put it on your Visa, Discover, American Express, or MasterCard. You know, if you want to pick up on a pair of tickets to any of a number of shows that we have, some great, great tickets that have been offered to us through friends out at the Heights Theater or at the Do-Si-Do up in the Woodlands or at the Cynthia Woods Pavilion or the House of Blues or the Warehouse Live or Rockefeller's, the Hobby Center, a whole bunch of the Smart Center down in Sugarland. So we've got tickets to different venues all around the Petro Metro. If you want to pick up on one of those as a thank you gift, or if you want a KPFT t-shirt or a tote bag or something, a mug, 713-526-5735. 1-800-738-7738. Just let us know that you're there, that you care, you got something to spare that you're willing to share to keep this important program on the air. I think it's only fair. 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. Come on, this is the candy edition of Growing Up in America. Needs your support.
We don't
want Bob and Mandy to get, you know, this swollen head.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, well, they can't really hit the goal unless we're there.
You're absolutely right. We can't. We cannot handle that.
Yeah.
Ego is something we battle every day in our office, and we cannot go back without meeting our goal today. It's critical.
713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. The Lawrence line is confirmed, so we do have a quarter of our goal met.
Fantastic.
We have about a quarter of an hour in which to raise three quarters of the goal. So the metrics are a little off, but we can work it out as soon as you work out your digits and tap those numbers in. 713-526-KPFT. 526-5738.
We are so excited for that Lawrence was able to call in and confirm that donation for our show. And actually, we've gotten so carried away in our conversation, Andy, we are going to skip part of our normally scheduled show because we have three unbelievable
thumbs
guests.
Thumbs up to skipping the next portion.
Thumbs up. Well played, sir. We have some guests here with us live in studio. And while not quite as notorious as Willie Nelson coming in here and taking a nap, they have a lot of really good information to share. We've had, well, I was going to say this week, but today and for part of the week this week, we've had the opportunity to collaborate with a team that is here in town from the National Black Child Development Institute. Thank you guys so much for being here. I know I put you on the spot a little bit earlier, threw a little bit of shade about navigating our Houston streets, but we really are glad that you're here. Would love to just open up the conversation. Oh, of course you had to have your
intro. Love.
I'm sorry, I tried to skip that part too. And y'all have seen the intro music is probably my favorite part. Can't help but dance.
Mine too.
A little bit every time. Why don't you guys start by telling us just a little bit about yourselves, introduce yourselves to our listeners out there, and tell us a little bit about what the National Black Child Development Institute does.
Sure. Thank you. It is such a pleasure to be on the candy
the
hour
candy.
Of the show. And just shout out to Bob for having us on. I am Tobika Green, President and CEO of the National Black Child Development Institute, and I am joined today by two incredible colleagues, one being Deborah Green, who is the president of our Black Child Development Institute Houston, and the other being Amisha Cross, our Director of Policy and External Relations. Just a little bit about who we are.
Yes,
and we'll just delve right in. For 48 years, the National Black Child Development Institute has been committed to our mission to improve and advance the quality of life for Black children and families through education and advocacy. And what that means is that we focus on programs, initiatives, develop curricula and training that are trauma-informed. So we were excited about the earlier conversation, evidence-based and strengths-based, and then, of course, culturally relevant. Primary areas of focus for us are family engagement and health and wellness and, of course, literacy. We are here today to share and launching locally two major initiatives, but I can allow my colleagues to join me as we share
Absolutely.
Those. One being delivering on the promise, and this is our effort to eliminate suspensions and expulsions in early childhood education. And so Amisha is leading that work, and I'll share the one stat as she chimes in. Every day, 250 preschoolers are suspended. Every day, 250 preschoolers.
Just let that sink, listeners. And preschoolers, give me an age range. Are you talking 3, 4, 5?
Mm-hmm.
3, 4, and 5 years old.
It can be 5, depending on the state.
As early as 3 years old, our babies are getting suspended or expelled in this country. And the National Black Child Development Institute launched the Delivering on the Promise campaign to address this. In a variety of ways. One, to elevate and raise this issue as something that's extremely important. People talk about suspensions and expulsions in the school-to-prison pipeline at K-12. Rarely do they recognize that it actually starts at the preschool level. We need to ensure that everyone across the country knows that 3-year-olds are being suspended and expelled. also the interventions that are appropriate and age appropriate to assist in students who are dealing with trauma. One of the things that came on earlier in segments of this show was that 45% number. That matters. It affects preschoolers as well.
There's
we have to
reason.
Have things in place for that.
Yes, absolutely. There's a reason that a three-year-old, we'll just throw that out there, that, and Edith even said, isn't having a typical tantrum, right? There's probably something else going on, and just sending them home to the environment where that something else is likely going on doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Exactly. That's why supports are so important. And as Amisha said, we'd never call for the elimination of suspension and expulsion without also speaking to the social and emotional supports that are necessary.
Right. And so I feel like I have to confess, and I don't know if you heard the scuttlebutt around the office today, but as a former school administrator, I'm the statistical outlier in my office because I was the school administrator that said, sometimes we do need to suspend a pre-K student, and not because I didn't know that child had experienced an ACE or that they weren't hurting deep inside, but there was nothing we could do. I wasn't trained to do what was needed. My counselors, plural counselors, mm-hmm. on an elementary campus, were busy administering tests, mm-hmm. and we couldn't give the kids what they needed. And so to keep themselves safe, to keep our other students safe, oftentimes that was a very, keep ourselves safe sometimes, just for the record, I'll tell y'all that story off the air, but that was a very difficult decision, that we oftentimes face. And it's still, that's the one thing in the office that everybody knows it'll really get me going, because I'm not saying that my thought always is we don't have what we need in the schools. Mm-hmm. And it's not even a matter of funding. It's a matter of allocating our funding in a way that supports those things.
And I'm really glad that you brought that up. That is actually another essential component of the Delivering on the Promise campaign, to ensure that teachers are equipped not only in training, but also receive the supports necessary in the classroom, be it social, emotional, counseling, trauma-informed care, culturally responsive practice, all of those things that are necessary to be able to serve the full child.
But Amisha, they have to pass the STAR test in third grade. Deep cleansing breath. I know. A little bit of sarcasm there, right? But that's oftentimes what we hear. We would hear an elementary, a pre-K or pre-K 4 teacher, 3 teacher, talking about their focus on instruction. Well, the instruction doesn't matter if the kid's not in a mental cognitive state where they're ready to learn that information, if we're not tending to those social
needs. We're dealing with the whole child.
That's right.
It's not solely that. And so the supports are important, but also the training.
That's right.
And so there is a role for higher ed and the academy to not solely deliver this through professional development, but also just in the overall training. And it takes the mobilization of what I call aligned, coordinated services to ensure that children and the families that are there and their ecosystem to provide the kind of support that's needed. And so we are excited to be here, not solely to share the message and the call, but to listen and learn. And so hearing from Katie, that real challenge, right? Mm-hmm. This is what I faced every day. And there was something that occurred that
literally every single day. Just to be very clear.
I've worked in urban schools as well. I've worked in rural schools. I understand.
It happens.
It happens across the board. And so we have to ensure that those supports are there. And that's why we're here. We just left one incredible conversation where we talked about the role of the social worker, or the site coordinator, and ensuring that it is that intention to what's happening in the classroom and also outside of. So when we talk about adverse childhood experiences, that's where those are occurring.
I love that you use the word ecosystem. That makes so much sense in regards to what our kids need. Like we have to pay attention to everything, to all of it. It's not just, in this case, in early elementary school or pre-K years, it's not just about the ABCs and 1-2-3s. There's so much of it. And we know that's true. We see it in our K-12 experiences. We know we need that attention there. Why wouldn't we be giving it to kids? Especially we know that important time of brain development. We're like mapping the course for the rest of their lives with their brain. So we need to be sure we're feeding them and providing an ecosystem that is safe and conducive to I'm preaching to the choir. No, I know, you guys. I'm sorry. You got me going this afternoon.
But, you know, Katie, there's a second part to that. So it is that, but it's then also the educator.
That's right.
And if we think about Walter Gilliam's research out of Yale, that there's a role that implicit bias plays, right?
Absolutely.
Regardless of the color of the educator. And so we have to ensure also that there's proper understanding and then training for that. It's not always about the activity or behavior of the child. Often it is the adult.
You mm-hmm. just described chapter 5 of my dissertation.
Oh, I love
right
it.
There.
Okay.
So I have a question. If you guys had a magic wand and could change something, a policy either at the state level, at the local level, what would you change to help rectify this challenge, help address this challenge?
I'll allow my colleagues first. Deborah, our local president.
Well, one thing that I'd like to just really, before I answer your question, mm-hmm. is talk about the data. Because mm-hmm. data tells the story. So what is the story that the data tells? Mm. So if I had a magic wand, I would change the data. Mm. But why would I change the data? It would be because we would really be reaching forward and doing those things that will improve the future outcomes of our children. Mm-hmm. So I'm super excited. Thank you guys again for allowing us this opportunity to present. And I'm so excited about National NBCDI coming to Houston. Oh, my God.
We're excited to be here.
I am a Houstonian, just so you know, born and raised here in Houston. So I'm very invested in Houston and whatever happens, not only here, but nationwide for our children. And one thing that's very exciting is the state of the black child that is being brought to Texas, and that I believe will truly inform our practice.
And so my wand has to do with equity and how one fully legislates that, right? And so it is that, so magic dust and the like, understanding that we should meet children and families where they are. And so that's really what equity is
and
about.
And everybody is in a different location.
Exactly.
And there's not one single fix
Katie
for everybody.
Katie is answering this for me. So, yes. No,
I'm
going to
slide
perfect.
Back from the mic now.
No, perfectly stated. No. It is exactly
Chapter
that.
Chapter 5 of my dissertation.
Oh. Another 5. I will be reviewing that and also cite it. Amisha?
I would definitely say budget allocation would be one. I feel as though supports are often mentioned. People recognize it in the classroom. Some of our legislators recognize it as well. It simply never makes it to a legislative priority. And for us to really start paying attention to what is necessary, not only for our teachers, but for the full development of the whole child in the classroom, we have to provide them with the supports. We can no longer count on teachers to be the counselors, to be the pseudo parents, to be big brother, to be the mentors, to do all of those things
right.
on a very short budget. We necessarily have to have a budget that actually makes sense and one that allows teachers to do their primary job. Teach.
And we've got Amisha throwing her fist around in here. She is fired up and impassioned, and that's what it takes,
yes.
right?
Mm.
And we know in Texas right now, we are unfortunately facing a full school finance system that has chronically proven to be broken. And there are a lot of people working really hard to solve the problem. We haven't gotten to that solution yet, but I think I'm hopeful that we'll get there where we can have an education system that is funded in a manner that is equitable and can really meet all of those needs of kids. Mm-hmm. We're running really short on time. I feel like we could talk for hours, but this is the most important part of our show every week. This is our final four. This is where we get to ask the hard-hitting questions. Mm-hmm. So if you guys are ready, I'll just throw a question out, and if you all each just want to chime in real quick, we'll start with... Oh, of course our intro music will start with that.
I love it.
What was your favorite toy to play with as a child?
I love my paper dolls. I mean, I have to confess, I did. I mean, I loved my Atari. Now I'm dating myself. Amisha's
right.
like, what is that?
What is this Atari you speak of?
Yeah, so I'm going to leave with the paper dolls.
That is fantastic. And Amisha, I'm going to throw this one to you. What did you want to be when you were growing up?
I wanted to be president.
Very good. Is that still a goal? Is that
it still is until I saw Trump in there. Then I said, well.
So are we going to make a 10-year plan for that as well, just like Lawrence made promises for? Next, what is was your favorite book to read as a child?
Well, I really like reading. So I really, a subject matter, whatever you want to, you know, all the books, I liked it. But depending on which age, so... I can't really say what my favorite book was.
That's a tough problem to have, right?
Yeah,
so
like
many favorite books. Well, with that, we have one more question, but I do want to check in with Dwayne real quick. I think we have like 30 seconds. Dwayne.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How did we do?
Well, thanks to Lawrence, we did something. But, you know, we could do a whole lot more even in these final few seconds if you just make that call to 713.
We have an announcement coming in live.
5738.
We have an announcement coming from the front porch.
Breaking news. I will, this is Topeka, I will make a $100 donation matching Lawrence.
Thank you, Topeka. That's wonderful. That's the kind of guest that we always want. But thank you so much for your not only your contribution to KPFT and to Children at Risk, but that impacts kids across the state.
Thank
and
you
so
for the
you
platform.
Can rest your head easy knowing that that donation really does have an impact. Dwayne, do you have any parting words for us as
well,
we wrap this hour up?
I know we didn't quite make the goal, but we did have some great conversations and some great information was shared. This is part of what this radio station exists